What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, a day later than normal, but we're still going to plug along and do this. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdaw. C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, is Alan Medlock, the Redbird Daily, and A Medlock 1 on the Twitters. Speaking of, if you haven't yet, I'll do the plug right here. You can still go vote for your best, rate would be a better word. Your top Twitter followers on my site. Go find the pinned tweet on C70 to go register your opinions. We like to hear them, and we'll be doing the combining a list pretty soon of the top Twitter follows. So go give opinions on that. Hopefully good ones. But anyway, we'll get that out of the way. We'll put the plugs and the advertising at the top then. Alan, and I said, we'll get unimportant stuff out of the way. We'll talk about these playoffs just a little bit. Cubs and Dodgers, and I'll admit, I don't watch much playoff baseball, especially when the Cardinals aren't in it. I'll follow it here and there. It's extremely difficult to watch playoff baseball when the Cubs are playing because, you know, you're afraid they're going to continue to win. And I very rarely pay any attention to the American League, even at best of times. But, you know, the Cubs and Nationals played a series that was very interesting, a series that Washington had every single possibility, chance to win, and did not. Thankfully, the Dodgers seemed to be playing like the Dodgers of 116 wins that we thought they were going to get, and taking it to them. But that National series, for when you're rooting so hard against one team, was difficult to stomach, I think.
It was the just like you had mentioned, they were they're hitless through six innings. The Cubs were hitless through six innings on two occasions and came back to win those games. And it was kind of tough to stomach. It's amazing to me, like we had spoke a little bit earlier, that offense that if you go on, you know, one of the you'll be going Baseball Reference and look is so good to perform so bad for the Nationals. It was really bad, and they had a hard time scoring runs, and, you know, I'm still not convinced the Cubs pitching's that good, so I don't know. I thought the outcome would be better, but my predictions were completely terrible. I had Cleveland and Washington in the World Series.
Yeah.
So I can't say much. I'll just shut up.
Yeah, that was reasonable. You know, I am still a little surprised how quickly Cleveland was dispatched. I just didn't really see that happening, but Astros are up 2-0. It would be very interesting to see the Astros back in the World Series. It would, you know, again, we keep that Sports Illustrated cover from a couple of years ago now still alive. As long as the Cubs lose, I think that's the biggest thing. I think that maybe you saw. I'm sure you saw it on Twitter. It was floating around even before Game 5. But definitely it was updated afterwards. When you go back to Game 5 of 2012, when the game we all know, the Pete Cosma game, since then, every playoff loss that the Nationals has had has either been one run, or I think there was one that was two runs, but that was one of the games in this series where there were no hit through a certain period of time. They've had chance after chance after chance to win ball games, and yet they still haven't won a first round series. You know, they had it where they had, you know, Bryce Harper up with the game on the line in the bottom of the ninth. I mean, that's where you want it, I guess, but you'd much rather have a lead. It's just amazing to look through that run of losses and just see how much that just, you know, one hit, one play, one catch or something, and, you know, we could be talking about a Nationalist team that's won a World Series or something like that, but instead we're talking about a team that can't get out of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, the record is, after that, because I felt like, even at being the defending champs, that Washington may have been the better team mm-hmm. in that series. You know, they were dominant up until the comeback, you know. So, I don't know. You wonder if that window's not closing a little bit. I'm a big Rendon guy, and I think that he is a star and is going to be a huge star. And, you know, Zimmerman's locked up for a while, and, of course, Turner's coming around. Turner, to me, has a ways to go. Mm. And I understand that he was hurt this year, and that's going to slow development a little bit. But he's going to have to show a little bit more to me to get to the superstar status that he really thought. And then, you know, you're kind of playing with fire on the Harper deal. You know, because, you know, after next year, he can walk. So that is going to be an issue all next year for him. So, you know, Worth will probably be gone. You know, you've got Scherzer, which is always going to keep you in the game, and Strasburg. So they're going to be good. But you just wonder if that window hadn't closed, which makes you feel bad for him a little bit, with a talented team that, with that, just that organizational cloud kind of over their head from Montreal to now Washington. So I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about that the entire time. I was like, man, I really wish they'd get through this, just because. I mean, not only in 12 were they maybe the better team. They may have been last year to the Giants. You know, it was the last year they played the Giants in the first round. I can't remember, but okay, and then my years run together, but regardless, I feel like they could have won at least one of those series to get through, and you never know what would have happened in one of those. I'm so glad that Strasburg pitched in Game 4, just because whenever I heard that he didn't feel well, and that was how it was worded, that was part of my issue, was he didn't feel well and he was out of his routine. I was like, man, your representation may have cost you World Series anyway, because if he'd have been on that 12 team, they'd probably stand a much better chance of winning that series. And, you know, you finally have your chance after the injuries and all that to be right back where you are. To set that one out would have looked bad. So I was so glad that he threw and threw well, and hopefully you put that to rest.
Yeah.
But you just kind of wonder. You don't know. I mean, they may never be back. You don't know.
And I think it's kind of the thing, you start to, if you believe in curses, which is kind of silly if you do, but, you know, you do look back at that 12th season, and they said, I don't know if they said it outright, or they basically said, we're going to be contending for championships for years, we're going to save Strasburg here, and they haven't. I mean, they've been in playoff contention. I think the next year they were terrible, but, you know, they've had contention, and they've had chances. But they've not been able to win. And you know, you look at, like I said, Strasburg pitched very great, and then it unraveled late. But then you look at, you know, Game 5, they have a lead, they bring in Max Scherzer, and then what? You know, hit by pitch, catcher's interference, a guy reaches on a, you know, wild pitch, a strikeout. I mean, you know, like, there was like four things in a row, and I forgot what the other one was, that had never happened in one inning together. Yeah. Baseball Reference came out and said there's only been like four or five games that have had all those pieces, you know, much less in one inning, much less in that order. And you just, I mean, it's like, what can you do? You just, you know, so I don't know. But again, you know, the Cubs move on. Hopefully the Dodgers take it to them. You know, they're winning right now 5-2, and hopefully they'll take that 1-0 lead, and because, you know, we're already. I'm tired. I'm tired of a world where the Cubs are good, and I don't think I can handle a world where the Cubs are back-to-back World Series titles. And I think we've kind of proven that as long as you keep them alive, something has a chance of happening. And that I don't like.
Well, and you kind of have to respect the fact that they do battle and come back and everything, but it has become really frustrating when you look at the fact that they have won already a playoff series against an arguably better opponent. And this would, you would think the Dodgers, you know, on paper, clearly are the better team. So, you know, you need, they need to get knocked out of their misery and then, you know, kind of go back to common or to level ground with everybody starting next year. But yeah, it's, I felt like even in the comeback in game five the other night, you know, you have a, you know, a bloop single out of Zobrist. You have Contreras, who's about a step safe on the play up the middle. Then, you know, you find a ball right down the line from Russell and you've scored after two dominant, you know, outs to Bryant and Rizzo. Then you have a 2-1, you have a one-run lead on those three at bats after off Scherzer, who you think you can pretty much lock it down at that point. I mean, you and I talked about, the metrics may say something else, but I'm telling you, they're a lucky team.
They are. I mean, you look at the, you know, the you know, catching the guy off first, and the replay showing that he was, and again, that's. Yeah, I said it on Twitter, that, and I've said it, I think we've talked about it before, I think that's not what replay should be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that replay is for kind of obvious plays, you know, like I said, Dinkinger, you know, we all know that was obvious. Would not have taken frame by frame, it was pretty clear. You look at, you know, Jim Joyce in that, you know, perfect game that Galarraga was throwing. You know, that missed the place completely. Everybody knew it. He knew it as soon as it happened. You know, plays like that, I don't want to know. I don't think it's right to use, you know, super slow-mo replay to see if a lace of the glove is still touching the guy if he's a half a fraction off the base. I just don't think that's what it should be. I think there should be some sort of rule that, you know, if you can tell, I guess to some degree, I wish the managers didn't have that option to call the booth. I just wish that, you know, if you can tell it from where you're sitting, and challenge it. If you can't tell it from where you're sitting, then let it go. It may be right, it may be wrong, but I don't think that that's what replay is for, but that's what we're getting it to. And again, it's kind of difficult to, if you've got that option, you know, then it's going to be, I mean, then you're going to use it. And then that's what it's going to be. It's going to be outer safe because, you know, the guy, and there are people, it's changed the game because of how people keep the tags on them. But again, it's like, hey, he hit the glove of his, you know, the batting glove in the back pocket, you know, is that really right? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that. I'm not a fan of, replay anyway, and you're right, for some of those major calls it would have been nice to have, but it's I completely agree with you in that it is used on so many things that are not what it was intended to do. Yeah. You know, those kind of the off the bag plays, the slide past the bag plays, you know, all kinds of stuff. You see that more than anything that takes so much time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I'm not a big fan. I completely agree with you.
I was fine when they started letting the umpires consult. And, you know, that would seem to be the best way for me. Because if the four umpires that are watching this, and granted, they also have other things going on, but if four of them can't see, you know, an obvious play that was blown, then you just, you know, just deal. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, that's part of baseball. But, you know, I've always been like that. I've just never been a huge replay fan. I know that sometimes it's that whole get it right thing, but, you know, it doesn't always get it right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And we have seen that a number of times. We've seen it with the Cardinals this year, and we saw it in that play. I mean, it may have been right, but, you know, I was not watching the game. I was following it on Twitter, and, you know, there's a slew of people that are, no, he's safe, or no, you know, mainly it was, well, he might be out, but there's not enough evidence to overturn that. And then they did it anyway. So, you know, I don't like that. And I don't know if they'll ever address it, because, you know, but I just feel like there's got to be some sort of more margin of error there. I don't know. Anyway, we went farther off on that than I expected. Get me started, and I don't stop.
I hear you.
Cardinals did not have, obviously, you know, it's quiet, for the most part, quiet. Guys have gone back home. Matt Bowman is still warming up at Busch Stadium. But for the most part, nothing else is happening. We saw this week Bob Nightingale throw out, and again, I don't know that he has anything to back it up. He is a national reporter. He does, in theory, have sources. He did not seem to indicate necessarily why this would be a case. But he said that if Greg Holland, who is closing for the Rockies now, right? We'll make sure.
Yes.
Used to be the... Anyway, he had a $15 million option, something like that. 14, maybe it was a little bit less than that. And he is going to decline it. I think he already has declined it. If he does not work out something, if he does not accept the qualifying offer, Nightingale says the Cardinals are ready to pounce. I believe that was the word for what he was using. Let's take Holland specifically out of the equation for just a minute. Does it make sense, do you think, for the Cardinals to go out and spend big money on a name closer?
I don't think so. I'm not a big fan of spending a lot of bullpen money, and especially spending closer money. Like, I was okay with the Cecil deal last year, and I would be all right with, a market value, maybe a little bit more for maybe Ocasio. Just to come in, just to fortify that. But I think that they're going to, I think it's going to be not by committee, but I think it'll probably be a, if it's not a Nicasio and it's not a Lions, I think they may go either build from within and just throw a ton of arms at the situation, or that will be one of the things that are addressed in a trade. You know, if whether it be for a bat plus for a starter plus, you know, that plus being the bullpen piece. Long way around it, any closer and any bat is going to be linked to the Cardinals this year. You know, it's whether through the media, whether it's agent leak, you know, I don't even think that Nightingale necessarily had a source on that, but I think that he just put the pieces together to say, hey, this is one of the closers that they're going to focus on. I just don't see the Cardinals paying the money it's going to take to get Holland or Davis in St. Louis, both on the one, you know, Holland coming off Tommy John with his velocity was not great this year, but neither was Lance Lynn's. But, the warning signs are there on Holland to me to not do it. And in my frame of mind anyway, I don't like paying for the closer position. You know, I think that's such an overpay for those guys. Yes, I think you should fortify the bullpen. I think you can get Nicasio in. I think that was part of the deal, is getting him in-house to have first negotiating rights on it. And we know that it's going to be a problem. I just don't see this one being a fit.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, you're right. The volatility of relievers really worries me now. You know, if you can get a guy that has been doing it for a number of years in the closer role, then maybe you think about it. And again, I will say that if the Cardinals are trying to break their mold, if they're trying to be different than what they would be, this would definitely be different, because you're right. They have not wanted to do this. That, you know, the biggest money they've ever spent on that kind of thing was Jason Isringhausen back in 2002, and I think it was like $3 million a year or something back then. I mean, it was something really ridiculously cheap. Even though it was like one of the biggest reliever contracts they'd ever issued at the time. And you're right, you kind of look at some of Holland's splits, he was worse away from Coors. If you look at his ERA, I mean, which, again, reliever ERA is not necessarily the greatest of marks, but, you know, he pulled up a lot of saves. And there is something to that. You know, he strikes out about three times as many as he walks. I mean, that's good. I mean, you know, K per nine is in double digits. So there's good things there. But yeah, I'm not sold on that. And I don't think there's very many relievers out there that you would pay that kind of money for. I mean, maybe, you know, we saw what Kelsey Jansen was out a few years ago. And even then, I think it was kind of hesitant to try to go out and do that if you wanted to. I mean, the Dodgers did, and it's obviously paid off. And there is something to be said for having, if you can get the right guy, and I don't know that Holland is the right guy, but to have, you know, you've not had that consistency. You've not had that ninth inning lockdown spot for a while now. I mean, you had O last year who was good, but then he wasn't good this year. You know, you had Rosenthal for a year, but he wasn't good the next year. If you could get a guy that you were pretty sure was going to be good for 3 years, I mean, maybe there's something to it, but I'm just not sure Holland's that guy, and it would seem very strange that the Cardinals would go that direction, like you said. Nicasio, I'm not 100%, I'm not saying you have to make Nicasio the closer. He would make the bullpen better even if he's thrown in the seventh or eighth if you finally did find some sort of closer. But, you know, you could also have him close, and he's going to be a lot cheaper. Throwing arms at the issue does seem to be the better idea, especially when you've got guys like Brett Cecil that you're going to have to keep paying. So it was really strange to see that, and I don't know if there's any kind of connections or not, but I just don't see how the Cardinals are going to be in that mix.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense to me either. After he had posted it, with him being in St. Louis, you got to give it credibility, you know, automatically, because he would seem to have some kind of inroads to know some stuff. This is one I felt like he just kind of, you know, threw stuff against the wall, you know, just to see. So we'll see. And you're exactly right. That was I was kind of going in that direction as well. You know, we're always talking about comfort zone, and at one point they're going to have to step out of it in some way, to where we both think that's going to be Stanton in contract or a 1 year of Donaldson and roll the dice. It may be a situation like that where, you know, they sign a Holland. I just don't think I don't think it's the right fit, and I don't think that there's much – truth to it.
Yeah, I don't either. Again, they are going to look for some bullpen arms. I don't think that's a doubt. But like I said, Cecil's contract's gonna scare, I think, to some degree. Of, you know, you really want to be comfortable with who you're getting, because, you know, if you sign them for, well, like I said, Cecil's what, a 4 year deal. Year one wasn't great. You don't have a guarantee that years two, three, and four are gonna be any better. So, they've been burned there a few times. I don't know if they'll go deep or not, but. Like I said, if they want to just completely shake up their, you know, status quo and say, this team is not working the way we want to do it, so we're going to do, like, everything different, then that would be it. But I think you're right. I think they're more likely to do that kind of thing with a bat like Stanton or something of that nature versus trying to do it with the back-end reliever.
Yeah.
The other part, I mean, is there anything else we want to talk about in that before we move on? Because I think we kind of slammed that down pretty quick.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of many that we'll probably have to give our take on. I fully expect it to be busy, not only in true Cardinals moves. The Cardinals rumors are going to be pretty heavy this year just because the needs are so obvious, and they made that clear at the end of the season presser.
Yeah, probably so. All right, the other thing that probably took up a lot of people's attention this week is an article that came out from Jose De Jesus Ortiz. Came out on the 9th, which would be, it might have been the end of, I guess it was the very beginning of the week, talking about two different things to some degree. The main thing that he talked about, I guess, was clubhouse chemistry. And how some people were pointing the fingers at people that didn't come up through the organization, that didn't know, quote, the Cardinal way. The other part was kind of pointing out some folks that were doing things that were not baseball related, that, like he even said, are cool when you win and they're not cool when you lose, which is typically the narrative of baseball. Everything is filtered through that, you know. A manager that wins, he can be a crusty old veteran that, you know, motivates his players, and if he loses, he's out of touch with the clubhouse because he yells at them too much. You know what I mean? It's just same guy, nothing changes, but the results are what everybody uses to frame the story. I guess the biggest thing that came out of it, and we'll start with this, and we'll come into some of it, was this implication, at least, that people were noticing Dexter Fowler leaving the clubhouse early, being one of the last guys in for the day, And it seemingly being an issue. You know, what do we think about that?
I don't know. I was trying to find my response. I read it about, this is probably about midnight last Saturday going into Sunday. And the minute I read it, I was like, this is an eye-opener. I think I even responded to him with, this is an eye-opener. Not that those kind of things are different, mm-hmm. but I really felt like you and I had talked about this. And Tommy Pham had brought this up and said that, you know, I'm not the most popular player in the clubhouse because, you know, I'm not the head of the chess team, the video mm-hmm. games, or the ping pong.
Right.
And I've specifically heard that Jericho was the best at all those things. I read an article before that he was the best at all that. And I thought that was funny that Pham had said that. So when those things were brought up, I was like, well, that's not – I have a feeling that's rehashed. But then the thing about Fowler, I was like, oh, not that I feel like there was a lot of holes poked in the story right away. And I don't think that that's what he was angling for. I think that he pointed out that there may be some clubhouse culture issues. But you're right. It did also say that, hey, if they're winning, these things aren't that big of an issue. It quickly turned to me of, you know, who actually said it and who had the issue with it. Within, you know, a day or so, you know, on Bernie, it was Bernie and Langosch were in there. And both, well, Mozeliak was on the day before, mm-hmm. and Langosch was on the day or two after. And both of them, you know, Mozeliak was like, hey, those things happen. It's the clubhouse isn't what it used to be. They don't come in and do their thing and stay all night. It's guys. He didn't get into specifics. He was just like, the training regimen on these guys is so specific now that it's down to the minute on how they do things. Mm-hmm. Well, Langosch kind of built on that a little bit, and she said Fowler has his own team of trainers, dietitians, and chefs. So he does everything at his house before he comes to the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he leaves the ballpark pretty quick just due to the young family. And then Bernie chimed in, and Bernie goes, I'd bet a lot of money that no one would think Holiday used to be the worst at those very things. And Langosch said, well, you would have won a lot of money because Holiday would come in, did the same thing, trained on his own, came in, played the game, and would leave. And she said, you can look back over my time of covering this team that you never got any sound bites from Holiday because he was out within that 10 minutes before we were allowed access to him. Well, his comment was, I've got four kids at home. You know, I don't need to be here all night. One of those type of situations. Which kind of, to me, thinks, you know, those are the things that I never consider. So, not that the story was completely false. I think that it was read and had grown tentacles about angles this could go. I feel like Fowler may be the next player in line where Carpenter was in the crosshairs of a lot of Cardinals fans this year. I think Fowler's close just because of the poor play in center field. And, I mean, I thought his bat carried him, you know, mm-hmm. this year. But people see it as a failure that he didn't lead off all year. Well, come to find out he's been hurt all year as well. You know, that's obviously going to be cast off as an excuse. But back to the article, I worried about that. The minute I read it, I was like, these are all things that we had heard before. I'd never heard that about Fowler, but it doesn't surprise me. And just like I had said on the Redbird Daily group message one time, I said, one thing that's hard for Cardinals fans to hear is, let's be completely honest, Fowler had he had a month more playing time last year than the Cardinals did, and a month more PR time because they were doing the winter circuit. So he was pretty much the whole end of 2016, he was busy doing that, you know. I don't think it hurt his performance on the field. You know, people can argue that, you know, in center field it was a failure this year, but I don't feel that way. Langosch had mentioned, she said, that no one in that clubhouse thinks that his getting there, his truancy, I guess you'd say, and his leaving early affected performance at all. She said, I don't think that was the case, and I think that the issues were maybe blown out of proportion, is how she worded it. And that kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, if the reason that Fowler's leaving early is to get home and see his family, you know, I mean, honestly, it makes me like him more. Because
I feel the same way.
You know, there's so many guys that, you know, baseball is all they have, all they will do, even though they are married, even though they have families. You know, baseball is their entire focus, and I think that's why you see so often that, you know, the woman that they're married to, the family that they have during baseball, they don't have long after baseball. When they retire and they're home every day, you know, Chris Carpenter, I think he had a divorce soon after baseball was over with. Others, you know, you see that. I know Ozzy had that issue, although it wasn't right after, I think. But, you know, I think there's times where these relationships, you know, they spend so much time at the ballpark during the year that, you know, it's cool to catch up, you know, during the off season. But even then, they're training and things. They put baseball first, and the family suffers to some degree. So, you know, to see Fowler do that and be able to spend time with his family, I think it's, you know, one, it's a good thing for him going forward, you know, and the idea that he's going to have a stable family relationship, hopefully, after baseball. But it's just, I mean, it's just good. I think it's good to be a little bit more well-rounded. Everybody now, from you know, Little League now, you know, they're focused, they're dedicated on just baseball, and you've seen it. I'm sure that, you know, the people that have, you know, travel all the time and they go to all these different events, and they've got their own coaches and they've got their own, you know, set up at home, and they just eat, breathe, and sleep baseball, and they're like, you know, 10 years old. You know, have a life, kid. But that's the idea that we have as a society, is that you've got to be extremely focused on sports to just get your very best out of it. And, you know, there's more to it than that. And so you're right. I know Fowler talked about his own chef. I mean, that was part of the articles that we saw when he came to St. Louis. He does do some of his own stuff. And I think you're right that Fowler can be in those crosshairs, partly because of that first 2 weeks.
Sure.
You know, first impression, he comes out and just doesn't hit the first couple of weeks, and it took him a while to get started. It happens, but unfortunately it was the first 2 weeks in a Cardinal uniform, and I'm not sure some opinions changed after that. And like you said, the defense and center was not really what we were hoping for, I don't think. I thought he was – I'm no judge at all. I thought it was passable, and I can understand why people would want to move him to a corner, or the fan was better. Although I still haven't quite gotten over Pham's complete mental lapses a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, where, you know, that inside the park home run that he never chased down after Fowler crashed into a wall, and there was one other play similar to that, you know, where Bader's running across the field to get the ball and Pham's nowhere to be seen. But, you know, that happens. I'm not really criticizing Pham too much. I'm just saying I get why people would want to move Fowler out of center, and that's fine. But, I mean, when you look at, like somebody pointed out, the Cardinals may have just stumbled into a relatively cheap three-hole hitter. You know, he hit 18 home runs and 64 RBI, and, you know, I know he only hit 264 on the year, but, you know, you put all that together, and that's a different player than you thought you were getting. Now, we'll see if that happens again next year. You know, maybe if he gets his feet back under him, he'll have more speed and he will get work back up. But he had an on-base average of .363, and that's right kind of in line with his, you know, his career average is .366, and that's, you know, it's right in line with that. I mean, that's not a bad OBP. So if he did wind up back in the leadoff spot, I think it'd be okay.
I hope that's what happens next year. I mean, that's you know, I was on a, you know, Twitter thread today with a lot of the guys that really know what's going on. So it was fun conversation early this morning, and just like I told you, I will be really surprised if Fowler is not your starting center fielder next year. I think that was some of the selling point. Now, he may not end there, but I think that you can't. They knew that he was injured. I think that he's going to get first shot without a doubt, and I think he's going to lead off. Part of me wants him to lead off just because I think he's probably equal to the leadoff hitter that Carpenter is. But just like John had posted, he said that that's the thing about, I'm kind of paraphrasing here. He said that's the thing. Carpenter is a good leadoff man, but that's all he is a leadoff man. He's not electric. Well, I think Fowler is that kind of leadoff guy, and I think the Cubs are actually missing it. And I think he's a guy that he gets on base. You know, you didn't see a lot of steals this year, but that may have been a direct effect of having the injured lower half. You never know. I will tell you, he's a great base runner. I mean, he takes the extra base very good, and he's the best on the team. You know, he and Pham are both very good. I want there to be an extended look of Carpenter hitting in front of a superstar. Say, you know, we keep throwing out Stanton, we keep throwing out Donaldson. Stanton, to me, is maybe your prototypical four guy. I would love to see Carpenter get a good half to full season hitting in front of him. As selective as he is, Carpenter's numbers could be pretty impressive, knowing that they can't walk him.
Yeah.
And I would really like to see that. I would like to see a Fowler, Pham, Carpenter free agent lineup next year.
And yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know where it's going to come from. I don't know what that change is going to be, but putting Carpenter in front of a guy that can drive him in, you know, with one swing, especially when you've got Fowler up there, and you put the two of them together, and you know, that's what we were thinking this year. You know, this idea of Fowler, Diaz, Carpenter, and then somebody. And the problem was that somebody was not really defined. You know, it was the idea that Steven Piscotty might be doubling them in or something like that, which makes some sense. But
I bought into that.
it did make sense.
Yeah.
Nobody saw the complete fall off of Steven Piscotty, I don't believe, this year. But so yeah, that would be very interesting. But let's get back a little bit more to what Ortiz was writing. You know, there was some pointing out of, hey, we've got some guys that have come in from other organizations. They haven't gone up through other Cardinal system. They don't know how we do things. They're the one, you know, there's some, you know, some issues there. And the problem with that, of course, as everybody kind of pointed out at the point, one, the example he used was, you know, Trevor Rosenthal, who even he admits is a Cardinal through and through, so I don't know that helped your point any. But two, I mean, who are the people that we complain the most about base running goofs and blunders this year?
You know, yeah.
Matt Carpenter and Steven Piscotty, who were drafted and developed by the Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know, if people are not doing the Cardinal way, maybe it's because they're actually being safe on the base pass, and that's, you know, just confusing. I don't know. I don't get that. I mean, I know I had heard some stuff earlier in the year, fifth, sixth hand, the clubhouse culture was not good. But it was not player against player. It was really player against Matheny. And, you know, I don't know if that got better as the season went along. I don't know if that was overblown or not even accurate. You know, again, like I said, that's way down the line. I'm not anywhere close to the clubhouse of the Cardinals, if anybody's clubhouse. But I don't know. I still, you know, they had the Cardinal. We talked about that big dinner that they had. And it seemed to work for a while, and it may still be. I mean, maybe those connections are still there. I mean, you can't. I don't know that you can blame all the losses on some sort of, you know, falling apart inside the clubhouse. They just didn't play well. And I think that's just part of that. You just got to look at what this team is and how are you going to fix it. I don't know. I mean, without bringing in a whole bunch of new players, you know, is Matt Carpenter going to learn how to run the bases? I doubt it. You know, is Steven Piscotty going to learn how to run the bases? You know, maybe a little bit more, but you know, unless they just say, hey guys, stop trying to take the extra base, which I think we're fine with, at least in most situations. You know, if Matt Carpenter wants to, take the easy double and don't worry about it, you know, but that's not Matheny's aggressiveness. But, you know, I don't think it has anything to do with people not being instructed the way the Cardinals are. And it's very weird to see that even being a possibility. And it would be interesting to know where Ortiz who he talked to, and, you know, is he talking to a player? Is he talking to a front office guy? Is he talking to a clubhouse guy? Is he talking to more than one? I mean, whatever. We don't know. Obviously, he's not naming names, but it is interesting to see this article. It is very interesting to see this article kind of, like you said, shot down so quickly by so many different other people.
Yeah, and it's, I don't even want to necessarily say that those things were wrong, but it was, I think it's easy to say now that it was overblown. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he did have the safety net of saying that, hey, if they were winning, these things wouldn't be pointed out. And we knew that there was dysfunction. There's no doubt about that, but I don't think it was animosity. I think there was more, maybe just the pieces didn't go together right. And, I mean, we're not the only ones to see that. I mean, this group had got coaches fired. Mm-hmm. And there's open dialogue that they're going to reshuffle the deck a little bit. So we know it wasn't all great. But I don't know. I felt like, personally, there was a little more finger-pointing in there. And I worried that some of that finger pointing was going to point to some things that could have gotten really ugly, considering the atmosphere in St. Louis and some parts of the country right now.
Yeah, there.
And I don't want to go into any more.
Yeah, I understand. I don't really want to go down that path either. Yeah. But I think it is interesting because, like I said, Ortiz has this idea of veterans that were kind of being, you know, some veterans continued to anger their teammates is what was perceived as either laziness, selfishness, or both. But then, he lists, you know, what, you know, some Cardinals wondered about the message that was sent to young players. You know, he lists enough names that there's not that many other names to go from now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's listed some that, but I don't know. I mean, you know, Chase Woodruff pointed out that this is not a new phenomenon, that they've had, you know, unnamed veteran sources complaining about players all the way back to Oscar Tavares and people talking about his worth ethic and stuff like that.
Sure.
You know, who knows where this all comes from, and it doesn't mean it's all the same players, but you know, that is the Molina and Wainwright and Carpenter clubhouse, and if they're not the one, I mean, I don't want to say that they're the ones talking to Ortiz, you know, under anonymity issues, but, you know, I don't know who else is going to have the kind of weight to do that. I mean, I guess Greg Garcia could talk to him, but, you know, I don't know why anybody would listen to him. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have the weight to do that. So I don't know. I mean, and again, I don't know that we want to go sitting around trying to figure out who's pointing fingers at who. But I do think it's kind of interesting because in times past, and I wrote about this a little bit in my post on this earlier in the week, you know, these were the kind of stories that got put out there, especially by front office types, trying to get people to be more accepting of a deal. You know, if you wanted, you know, to kind of soften the ground so that when somebody was dealt, it wasn't a huge surprise. You know, again, we've talked a little bit about Fowler being a possible trade candidate, but it's very unlikely, it feels like to me. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's all hidden around, and we should be focusing on the fact that they mentioned Jed Jerko's a ping pong player. You know, maybe that's the key. people aggravated at the ping pong player so they could trade him. I don't know, but it's just a really kind of strange story, and I don't know. You know, I just really don't know what to make of it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and there were probably several of those, and we knew there, like, you're right, we knew some issues. I don't think that's why they were third place in the division.
No. I will point out, I haven't listened to it, but I know that I saw that the Two Birds on a Bat podcast had Ortiz on, I think, in their most recent edition, to discuss this article. Again, like I said, I haven't listened to it. I do not know what he said or if it's of any additional import. But if you're still interested in this story, you might go check that out and see what he had to say. But I think we'll go ahead and move on as we're getting a little bit close to our regular hour here. And there's been a few things on the official site. And I guess I'm only going to really touch on one before we wrap it up. And I think it kind of goes along with what I'm talking about, how we've talked about articles that sometimes come out in the off season, and, you know, the wrote one on the official site that Grichuk may be the odd man out in the Cardinals outfield. And I saw this quote, and I think I'd heard about it at some point in time along the way, but I don't know if I'd ever read it. When they asked Grichuk if he was going to be back for 18 or if he thought he was in the Cardinals' plans for 18, he said, no, not necessarily. He said, but who knows, anything is possible, blah, 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 blah. You know, it sounds like Grichuk realizes he's in a position where he's probably not coming back. And you and I have talked about it. A lot of people have talked about it. That one seems to be the most obvious person to go, especially if they're going to bring in a big bat to play in the outfield. But I think we've also talked about the fact he fits pretty well in that fourth outfield spot, too.
I completely agree. You know, I can be kind of a Grichuk honk. There's no doubt about it. And I'm a Grichuk over Piscotty guy all day. I mean, I know that he strikes out a lot, and I'm on record of saying this, but 20 homers, 20 doubles is hard to come by. And, you can pretty much pencil them in. Strikeouts are, it's the end thing now, unfortunately. I think that will ultimately change a little bit, but, them being factored in as outs are outs, and strikeouts are just a part of the game. I think he's a good right fielder. I think that a full season of doing that I think he'd be a winning player. I mean, I like Grichuk, and I think what he brings. But you're right. There's going to be guys that are favorited guys that are going to have to go to improve the team. So, I don't know. I would like to see him get that shot, but the list behind him is pretty long, and, O'Neill seems to be the second coming of Grichuk, in Memphis right now. So it's another one of those question marks that will have to be answered throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, that off season, and I mean, it just feels like you're right. It's the obvious one. He's the obvious one to go in some sort of deal. And I think it's going to be fun to see who. I don't have to look, but in theory, they could even non-tender a guy like Grichuk. I mean, I know I'd have to look and see exactly where he is in the arbitration schedule and all that stuff. But in theory, they could non-tender him. Now, that would be kind of silly because I think there's plenty of trade possibility there. I mean, I think there's value to Randall Grichuk. I don't think you just cast him aside. But, there's just too many people in that outfield. And it's kind of like we've seen a little bit in the pitching side of things. There's just too many arms, but not necessarily are any of them superstars. And if you can turn two or three solid players into one really, really good one, then that would be a very good thing to do. And it's very difficult to see unless they trade a Piscotty and a Pham, which I don't think that they would do. But if they could do something like that, or maybe you could at least trade Piscotty. Maybe you could make your Grichuk your fourth outfielder in that regard. But I don't know. It feels like they're more likely to keep Piscotty than anything else.
Yeah, and Grichuk being, but he's due for a bump this year in arbitration. So that factors in quite a bit. I mean, they've made a number of trades, right, when they're due to pay someone, which is the best, business-wise, that's why they're successful. They make those decisions. So so that could factor in quite a bit as well. So, yeah, just like you and I talked about, and we're going to talk about it ad nauseum, it's going to be interesting how all these pieces are put together.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that'll wrap it for our Cardinals talk for this week. But I do want to get into a little bit about our off-season project. We've talked about it for a couple of weeks. You've seen it on Twitter. We put out there a Google form for you to fill out your top 15 favorite Cardinals. And this had nothing to do with how they, what their numbers were or if they were the best Cardinals or whatever. These were your favorites for whatever reason, whether you watched them or not, or if you just learned about them through history books, whether you, they could have been superstars, it could have been no-name guy that, hit a home run on your first game that you were there and you always liked him because of that, whatever the reason. So we put that out there. And we wound up with, let me look, 138 different entries, which is great. I mean, that was awesome. And we appreciate all the people that did this. And I will say, out of 138 entries, we had two people that seemed to think we were talking about just the current Cardinals, and which makes for some interesting votes. And we had about four people, I think, three or four that are, I don't know that they were trolling us, but they might have been. Then there was one that definitely was, who put Yadier Molina first and like a slew of backup catchers after that. But no matter what, we counted them all just in case, you know, somebody did just like Yadier Molina and a whole bunch. I mean, maybe he has a catcher fetish. I don't know. So we did that, and we came up with, what did I tell you, Alan? 189 different players, I think.
So, yes, I know it was up there. It's going to be a lot to go through.
It is a lot to go through, and we're not going to obviously spend time on every single person, but we've got them kind of broken down into groups by the point totals that they got. We're going to start next week. We're going to start talking about quite a few of them. I think we're going to look at anybody that received 15 points or fewer next week. And let me pull that up. That is a whopping total of 94 people. So our shows for the next couple of weeks may be more focused on this, but we hope you'll tune in, because we're going to, if nothing else, we're going to read all the names. And I think that that's a big thing, because that gives you a chance to hear some of these names that you hadn't thought about in a while, or you didn't, you know, maybe not in your 15, but you still had a soft spot for them or something like that. And we'll pick out a few out of that group to talk about, and, you know, maybe side try to figure out why they weren't higher, or why anybody put them down, or, you know, something like that. But, you know, I think it's, you know, some interesting things happen in this. The number one made sense, but I was a little surprised. Some of the ones, you know, there's some people that finished a little bit lower than I thought. We'll reiterate, I haven't told Alan what this order is. I've given him all the different names, but he doesn't know what order they're coming in. So he's going to be as surprised as you are when we're going through this. But we're looking forward to doing that, and hopefully you'll give us some feedback on that when you hear it, and have some discussions. We really appreciate the Twitter conversations that we saw as we were putting this vote out there. And so it should be fun. Alan, I know, you know, this was your idea, and it seems to have caught on. What are you looking forward to as we get into this next week?
I am really looking forward to the error breakdown. As in the era, because, you know, I'm a big 80s Cardinals guy. Some of my favorite teams were, you know, 85, 87. You know, those, the Ozzie Smith years were my favorites, the early 90s when they weren't so good, you know, one of those things. I'm ready to see those breakdowns. And what I'm really curious to see is, Twitter being relatively new, I want to know how heavy weighted it is for those newer age players, you know, from your 95 to current day, as opposed to some of the other ones. And then I'm really, some of the listeners, really a lot of Cardinals knowledge on even the 50s and 60s guys.
Yeah.
So I'm ready to see how it's all kind of broken down. And, you know, I even when I sent the deal to my buddies, there were some interesting names that came out that I know that we liked just because they were our kind of guys, and I know that they were picked. And it's funny because even on the Redbird Daily, you know, our group messages and stuff, they would name some guys that are like, oh, I didn't think about that. So I think just the name totality is going to be awesome, and I'm really ready to see how the breakdown goes in the years.
Yeah. I will say, just kind of glancing over that, I feel like there's a pretty – I mean, obviously, there's a lot more from 2000 and on, which, you know, sad to say, that's 17 years. That's a pretty good chunk of time.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be, because it seems like 2000 was just, you know, yesterday. But, you know, the Tony La Russa era, which, I mean, you kick it back to 96 there, is well represented. But there's a good number of people that, you know, like you said, from the 80s, that era time period. There's also some that are from the, you know, 60s and 70s and beyond. So I think that we got some good. Obviously, when I looked at these ballots, you know, there was obviously a good number of these people that had good opinions about historical Cardinals, and I say that, you know, especially in the 50s and 60s and stuff like that, people that you probably, the voters probably did see, or at least grew up with, and maybe a little bit older than the, you know, sweet spot of Twitter is right now, but that's good. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about some of those guys. There were names that came up that I didn't expect, and I, not that they were wrong at all. I think they made sense, but I had not thought of it like that. We got some current Cardinals. Like I said, we had a couple people that just voted on this year's Cardinals. But even so, even without that, even with some that had, you know, a very mixed ballot, still some current Cardinals, and not necessarily the ones you expected. I mean, I think you're not surprised when Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright gets votes, but some people, like a Colton Wong. Colton Wong got some votes that weren't just focused on this year. It's interesting. I just really interesting. And like I said, it's kind of fun to see who got the first place votes, because there was a good wide, you know, a variety there. So we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it next week, and get started on some of these names. I don't know. We'll just kind of talk about it next week. As I just said, let me just repeat myself because I'm just rambling now. Pretty bad when you can't go two sentences without saying the same thing. But I think we will kind of somewhat play it by ear and kind of put these out there and just see where our conversation takes us when we start talking about these players. We are going to then talk about, we're going to have some form of this every week, really up until for every show that we do, and we're, you know, once we get into the end of November and then some of December, we won't be recording quite as often. But we should be able to finish up with the final two, the show during winter warm-up, right then. So pretty much the whole off-season, and then I know there's still off-season after winter warm-up and before the spring training starts, but there's not much. Once that's kind of the kickoff to the season, is that winter warm-up. So we'll have some in each show, and obviously the next two or three shows we'll have more players than the others, but I think that kind of works out to our advantage because there's less Cardinal talk right now, so we can spend a little bit more time on this without making it a, you know, 5-hour show, hopefully. So anyway, Alan, is there any player you're looking forward to seeing where they wind up on the list, before we get started? I mean, just one name that you know, not really sure where they're going to wind up.
Well, one of my favorites, and I know that he was a favorite in St. Louis as well, but I'm really curious to see where Tommy Herr ends up. Just because everybody was so electric on those teams, being Coleman, McGee, Ozzie, of course. You know, you had Jack Clark, you know, in the mid-80s and in those days too. And he was the big bat, you know, which always, and that gets the most notoriety, even on a team that doesn't hit many home runs. Herr is intriguing to me just because he was always one of my favorites, and I kind of wanted to see where he ends up. I will say, you know, the Red Bird Daily, we're rolling out our top 100 that we had the formula for, and I was surprised he was where he was, and that's all I'll say. So I kind of want to see where it is as a fan perspective, as a pure fan favorite vote. I would like to see where he ends up.
Well, and we will see that. I know where it is. I won't tell you. but we will see that coming up, because you're right. I think that's very interesting, and it is interesting where he winds up. So we'll talk about that starting next week. We'll encourage you to, you know, again, subscribe to the show. You know, if it starts to get too unwieldy, it's possible that Alan and I will do some, you know, maybe midweek half-hour show to catch a few other names up. We'll just have to play it by ear, but if that's the case, you'll want to be subscribed to the show, and so you can get those downloads right there in your podcast app, whichever one you may be using. So do that. We'd appreciate any rating or reviewing that you would do at the same time. We could use a few more star ratings or our descriptions of what we are, especially if you can use less, you know, not four-letter words to describe us. We, you know, that's always a good thing. So we would appreciate your opinions there, and that'll help other people find us. Because I really said we're really excited about this this series. It's going to start next week, and I'd like to see have some as many people as possible giving it a listen. So I hope that you will subscribe it, share it with your friends, whatever the case may be. But Alan and I will be back next week. We'll probably talk a little bit about, well, what if something comes up this week, we'll talk about it before we get into the players. We haven't decided. We might do a little bit of review of the 17 season, but, you know, we've done a lot about it this year, and I am about to have the exit interviews. They'll start right now. They're kind of scheduled to start at the beginning of November, but that'll be looking back at every player there, so we might just move on from that. And again, it's not a season, Alan, it's not a season we really want to revisit, no. I don't think, a whole lot.
No, and I think everybody feels the same way. Like you and I were talking a little bit beforehand, kind of doing some planning. When the season was over, it seemed like a weight was lifted, you know, off everybody's shoulders a little bit. It was just one of those seasons that nothing ever went right, and 2 years of kind of the same thing. I think everybody's ready to move on, and the future looks pretty bright, and everybody wants to look and, you know, be a little more optimistic, and I think that we've seen that. And, you know, we don't really have to rehash it. It's good to go back and whenever all the smoke clears, to go back and kind of go over some of the highlights and lowlights and whatever. But I think people are ready to move on see a renewed optimism for 18.
Yeah, absolutely so. So, again, we'll be with you next week. If for some reason you're a Star Wars fan, we did do a Star Wars podcast on Thursday. That's right here on the, you know, if you've subscribed, you probably saw it coming down. If not, just go back or find us on the website. You can find it there. Alan was unable to join us again. We are going to get him on one of these before it's all said and done. But we talked about the Last Jedi trailer, so give that a listen as well. So until next week, I'm Daniel, and that's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.